Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We've got a great show coming up for you this week. First and foremost, we're going to be talking about some new polling that came out this week that's not quite as bad as the polling from last week. So that's a good sign, but still things are not looking up for the Democratic Party. So we're going to dive into that. I also have David Neiwert, contributor to the Daily Coast, author of multiple books. He's going to be here to tell us about Tucker Carlson's new disturbing Patriot Purge documentary and how it signals to his white nationalist base. And of course, blogger, author, and Salon.com contributor Chauncey DeVega is going to join me to talk about the critical race theory scare and how Republicans are hoping to ride that anger into victory in the 2022 midterms. And don't forget, you can get the full Ring of Fire show. Go to ROFpodcast.com, become a member, help support us, and of course, find us on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can also become a member of our YouTube community. Check out the community tab. Check out the different levels of support we have. We have the same levels of support, by the way, on our Patreon page at patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. So on last week's show, I talked about the fact that you had new polling data that came out that said that Republicans held a 10-point advantage, 51% to 41%, over the Democrats in terms of which party voters would vote for in the 2022 midterms. That is, by the way, the largest gap between the two parties since polling on this issue began all the way back in 1981. So things were looking up for Republicans. Well, guess what? We got new polling out this week. Quinnipiac University puts out the poll. And this one says that 46% of registered voters say they would rather see Republicans win the House in 2022 compared to 41% who say the Democrats should keep control of Congress. So that one's only a 5-point gap. So last week we had a 10-point gap. This week we have only a 5-point gap. So what does all of this mean? It means we have no idea what is going to happen in the 2022 midterms. Closing a 5-point gap in 7 days, as we all know, is pretty massive. So this is telling us that right now we cannot be freaking out about these bad poll numbers, especially, you know, Biden's approval rating. Another poll this week shows it's at 38%. Is it real? Yes, it's real. Is it going to change? Heck yeah, it's going to change. All of these polls are going to change over the next 12 months as we inch closer and closer to that election. And there's a lot of things that could, should, would, maybe might happen that are going to help continue to change this. First and foremost, obviously, the big one is the Build Back Better Act. If the Democrats pass even their scaled down version of the Build Back Better Act, you're going to see their poll numbers improve. You're going to see Biden's poll numbers improving because of that piece of legislation. Now, it is not a given that that is going to pass. So that still remains a massive question mark. We also have several other very popular ideas that are floating around out there that could certainly bolster the Democrats' chances in 2022. And a lot of these, by the way, have to do with Biden and orders that he could give. Big one, obviously, student loan debt. Now, this administration has been forgiving. You know, every month we get a new story. Oh, they forgave $2 billion here, $5 billion here. But when we have $1.7 trillion worth of student loan debt being held by several million Americans, I think it's more than 40 million Americans at this point, $5 billion seems like a lot, but it's really not. It's not even 1% of what is held out there. So, you know, that's a problem. We have to have some kind of massive student loan debt cancellation, forgiveness, whatever the administration wants to call it. That would be a huge boom to the Democratic Party. But of course, more importantly, it would be a massive boom to the individuals that owe this debt. In the nearly 2 years that student loan debts have been the payments, I guess I should say, that they've been suspended, we have seen this group of individuals able to get a little more financially secure. And another poll came out this week showing that 89% of student loan borrowers who have full-time jobs are not financially ready to have to resume those payments on February 1st. They say that when that starts, they're once again going to have to make some tough choices about their spending habits. They're going to have to cut down here. They're going to have to sacrifice there in order to make these payments. And we can take that burden off of these people. Now, I've had conflicting reports, okay? We see on social media that everybody says Biden can eliminate all of this with the stroke of a pen via executive order. I have been contacted actually by people, you know, we've had on Ring of Fire over the years, good friends. Richard Eskow is a great example. And he says that Biden cannot do this on his own. You know, this would take an act of Congress. And I absolutely do trust Richard Eskow. But we've also seen some lawmakers say that Biden could erase this. So I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. And I don't know that anybody really is. We do know that the federal student loans, the ones that come from the government, those can be forgiven with a stroke of a pen. Like, that's not questionable. But you also have people out there that take out student loans from actual lending institutions. I know one point in college, I had a $1,000 student loan from Chase, which, you know, eventually got paid off. But the private held loans, those are a little trickier. And so I think that's where the discrepancies come from. But the federal student loans, absolutely, you could erase. You're going to help people. You're going to boost your polling numbers. Second thing Democrats could do to give themselves an edge in 2022, legalize marijuana on the federal level. Right now, we have Elizabeth Warren and a group of Democratic senators, a small group, but it's growing, calling for President Biden to release all nonviolent marijuana related prisoners in the United States. And on top of that, expunge the records of anyone who's ever been convicted for a nonviolent marijuana related crime. You know, possession, selling, whatever it is. That would be huge. We've already seen states across the country working to decriminalize marijuana. And here the Biden administration is given this wonderful opportunity, and Congress needs to act on this, to decriminalize it federally, to end it, get rid of that stigma, get rid of the punishments, get people out of prison who don't belong there. You know, at this point, getting arrested, you know, for possession of marijuana or use of marijuana fully depends on where you are in the country, because in some areas, not a crime. In others, definitely a crime. You're going to jail. We have to have a unified standard, and that standard needs to be, it is decriminalized. We can regulate it like we regulate all of these other things, but that is something they could do to get an immediate polling boost ahead of the 2022 midterms. So those are just three options for the Democratic Party, because right now, yes, we know polls can change. We know they've changed again just in the last week, but they're still polling behind the Republicans in every possible way. And Biden's approval rating is not good. We have to acknowledge that reality. I don't personally, like I've said, I don't think it's fair that he has a 38% approval rating. I think that's way too low. But nevertheless, it is what it is. And we have to accept that. And we have to figure out ways to improve it. And that's something the Democratic Party needs to do. And I'm worried that they're not necessarily taking that as seriously as they should be. The other side of that, if the Democrats don't do anything to improve their poll numbers, if they just keep doing what they're doing, they still have a chance to outpoll Republicans, because what we're seeing right now on the Republican side is a lot of infighting. You have certain members who are out there, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, saying that we have to punish these Republicans who voted for the infrastructure bill. Then you have other Republicans like Dan Crenshaw, of all people, attacking Marjorie Taylor Greene's idea as stupid. So there is fighting happening within the Republican side. You know, Liz Cheney, the Wyoming GOP, just voted to say that we're not going to recognize you as a Republican. Then, of course, you've got people like Paul Gosar, you know, censured this week, stripped of his committee assignments, just like Marjorie Taylor Greene was earlier this year. All that negativity that we're seeing from the Republicans could absolutely harm them in the polls. So if the Democrats aren't able to deliver, that doesn't necessarily mean electoral annihilation for them in the midterms. You know, it's certainly not good. It's not good for the public, but there are ways they can still win if this Republican infighting continues. If Donald Trump stays out there like he was this week, attacking Mitch McConnell as an old broken crow and then a broken old crow because he couldn't keep his own insult straight, couldn't quite figure out the order that he wanted to attack Mitch McConnell in. So all of that plays a factor. And a month from now, this is all going to be different. And a month after that, it's going to be different again. So I guess what we need to do right now is use these polls not as a point of panic, but as a jumping off point, as an understanding that the Democratic Party has a lot of ground to make up, but they have plenty of options ahead of them that they could implement within the next 12 months to get the public back on their side. They came into office with some lofty promises. They can deliver on those, some of them easier than others. But if they're fighting for it, if they're doing this, then they could avoid a giant red tsunami that could be coming for them in 2022, especially because with the redistrict maps that are coming out now, Republicans are only a one seat disadvantage. So basically, redistricting has taken 5 seats away from Democrats already. Obviously, they still hold them right now, but next year the district is going to be different. It now leans red. So Republicans really only have to make up that 1 seat difference before they retake the majority. We have to fight back against that. It's going to be tougher for the Democrats in the House than it is for the Republicans. But if they deliver, it shouldn't be that difficult. Tucker Carlson recently launched his new documentary, Patriot Purge, where he attempts to basically rewrite recent history here in the United States, specifically the events of January 6th. And of course, he's thrown in a lot of fear mongering, saying that liberals are now trying to lock up, round up, and toss in Guantanamo Bay their conservative adversaries. Joining me to talk about this, as well as some other issues that are going on this week, author David Neiwirth. David, thank you for coming back on Ring of Fire with me. It's been a very long time since you and I have spoken, but it's great to have you back here.
Thanks, Farron. Always good to be here.
So let's dive right into this Tucker Carlson documentary. It's, you know, I believe it's a 3-part series that they've been slowly releasing out there, and it's the word disgusting doesn't even do it justice, I think, with what Tucker's doing. So lay this out for us.
Well, of course, I use the word documentary with air quotes in this case because there's nothing factual about it. There are no actual journalists involved in compiling this documentary. It was produced and co-written along with Tucker by, you know, one of his staff members who actually is a guy connected to white nationalists. And in fact, of course, the main source of his story, his arguments is that the FBI actually secretly made the January 6th insurrection a false flag operation with the intent of persecuting Trump voters. Is a guy who also is a white nationalist, a guy named Darren Beatty. And, you know, he's actually tried to lay out the case in print. And it's a joke because Beatty can't even distinguish, doesn't even understand how there's a difference between an unindicted co-conspirator and a cooperating defendant. And he mixes them up constantly in his things, and arguing that, you know, the FBI was using these informants to sort of coordinate the whole thing, mainly because several of the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, in fact, were FBI informants, but they weren't FBI informants to inform on their own organizations. They were providing the FBI with information about Antifa and Black Lives Matter. That was their role as FBI informants. They weren't informing on the FBI, on the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. So it's just a piece of garbage that white nationalists have put together, and is now being regurgitated by, Tucker Carlson and Glenn Greenwald and this whole faction that is trying to basically gaslight us about the events of January 6th. They're trying to tell us that what we saw, what we all saw on January 6th, didn't really happen. It was something else altogether, right? And, you know, we all saw it.
Right. And, well, you know, I just wanted to jump in and say that because we did all see this. You know, I'm not a guy that watches, you know, network news, cable news, anything like that. Usually I read to get my news. But that day I was glued to the screen. I was watching it. I think it was CNN kind of flipping back between them and NBC News and just, you know, calling my mom calling me every 5 minutes, you know, back and forth, like, oh, my God, are you watching this? Because everybody was watching it. We all knew what was happening. We saw who these people were. There was no question that this was a legitimate, you know, a failed coup attempt. But you got to call it what it is. This was a soft coup, a real coup, a failed coup. However you slice it, these people wanted to overthrow what the government was doing at the time and hinder Congress in the process. And now Tucker's out here saying, nope, let me give you the real story. And it's pure trash.
Well, and of course, that's the upshot of it is that, you know, well, the bad people aren't they're not the ones who invaded the Capitol and attempted to prevent the peaceful transfer of power that has been the hallmark of American democracy for its entire existence. No, the bad people are the ones who are trying to hold them account for it. And that's, you know, that's kind of the part of this pseudo documentary line. You know, he's got people saying they're hunting us down, they're hunting conservatives down and that sort of thing. And it's important to understand that one of the things that this sort of rhetoric does is it actually creates permission in the minds of the receptive listeners to engage in their own acts of violence, because it tells them that the other side is so evil and so nefarious and that they're going to use violence against you. So you might as well use it first, right? This is part of the logic. And this is how this sort of dynamic works. It's called scripted violence. And ultimately, Tucker is scripting the violence for, or at least scripting future violence for us. And, you know, we've got this powerful trend on the right, particularly online, and particularly when you go into some of the darker corners where the radical right is organizing, but also a lot of these militias and folks like this, and the eagerness among all these people to declare civil war on the rest of us is just astonishing and overpowering. I mean, a couple of weeks ago at a Charlie Kirk event in Idaho, we had a guy stand up and ask Charlie, when do we get to start using the guns? How many more elections do they steal before we start killing these people? And, you know, that, and it caught, raised a few eyebrows and made a few people point fingers, but there was only very brief attention paid to that. But the reality is that that guy's sentiments are actually incredibly common on the radical right, particularly online right now, because I spend a lot of time in these forums and stuff like that in places where they go, and I monitor what they say and I listen to what they're talking about. And all they've been talking about really for the last 3, 4, 5 months is civil war. And, you know, when can we start shooting the liberals? When can we start using the guns? And that, of course, is, you know, what they're all looking to the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Wisconsin for is, you know, they're hoping and waiting for an acquittal because if there is one, and I expect there will be, it's going to be a big green light for them to actually go ahead, because it's going to tell them that they can do this without consequence.
Right, right. Give them the permission saying, listen, as long as you say it was self-defense, go out there, do whatever you want, cross the state lines, get your hands on a weapon that you shouldn't even legally be able to have. I mean,
travel across state lines.
Yeah,
be a minor in possession of an AR-15. Protect
property that's not even your. I mean, yeah. Look, the whole thing. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that it is, you know, headed in that direction. But because this should have been a cut and dry case, like, you know, you killed these people, you know, you're going to jail. But of course, you know. We can argue about that all day long because we all know that what the judge did, the way the judge essentially made the prosecutors, you know, have to try this case with two hands tied behind their back. And that started at the very beginning of the trial when he said, right. You can't call these people victims, even though by definition they were victims. They were killed by this man or kid.
Yeah. And well, it even started before the trial when he really limited the kind of video evidence that they could produce. They weren't allowed to actually talk about the ideology of the militia that he went and joined. And this actually should have been central to the case because these militias are extreme radicals who are, they call themselves boogaloos. They're eager for a civil war. They can't wait to start shooting liberals. And this has a lot to do with preconditioning Rittenhouse's mind to be ready to pull that trigger at the drop of a hat, which is what he did. And and that's really, I think, important. But the judge said, oh, we don't want this to be a political trial. We also didn't get to learn about, you know, the background of one of his witnesses who got up there and explained that Kyle was certainly justified in what he was doing. This same witness actually happened to be a January 6th insurrectionist who was there and was telling the crowd on January 6th that we need to start a civil war. You know, none of that was allowed to be introduced into the courtroom. And I think it's really unfortunate because these are really central to understanding the dynamics of what happened that day.
Well, and you have to have all of the context, you know, to be able to paint the picture of who this individual is. You know, the photograph of him in the bar, which, again, right. He's 17 years old. He shouldn't even be in a bar, but throwing up the white power sign.
With a bunch of Proud Boys.
Exactly. You know, that and smiling, acting like, no, I didn't just murder two people in the street for everyone to see. And that is central to this case. And again, it all does kind of tie back a lot to this echo chamber that has been created on the right. And now it's not just Tucker Carlson out there pushing these white nationalist narratives, but you also do have all of these groups coming out there, the Boogaloos, the Proud Boys, and it all just feeds itself. It's become a monster.
Yeah.
And they're all feeding off one another and growing larger to the point where we have what a majority of Republicans say that violence might be necessary to, as they put it, quote, save America. Save us from what? We need saving from you is what we need right now.
Right, right. Well, they talk about saving America. I mean, this is part of the whole dynamic of calling themselves patriots. They really see themselves as the patriot movement. But you need to understand that the patriot movement has been historically and always will be fundamentally anti-democratic. The first thing you ever do, you know, if you talk to these folks about how, well, this was an attack on democracy, they will tell you, well, this is a republic, not a democracy, right? Which tells you right away that, I mean, of course, that's utterly false and just a joke of, you know, something that's actually just historically wrong. But it is something that they believe. It's something that was actually concocted by the John Birch Society back in the 1960s. And it has remained a steady part of this far-right patriot movement since its beginnings. And fundamentally, they believe that what they want is an autocratic republic run by Donald Trump. And that was obviously what they were trying to install on January 6th. And you know, they are the enemies of democracy. And if you try to talk to them about this, they will just say, well, we're saving the republic. It's not a democracy, you know.
Another thing also happened this week, too, that, you know, kind of a flash in the pan thing. Nobody paid too much attention to it. But I did a segment on this, and this was the fact that Tucker Carlson comes out this week and he tries to start saying, you know what? I don't think Vice President Kamala Harris was actually is American. And he said that he thinks this, you know, because she went to high school in Montreal. And to me, what this is this is just a birther redux at this point. You know, it's the remix. And it's because, okay, here's this elected official. They're a Democrat and they don't look like you. And because they don't look like you, clearly they cannot be from here. And this is just another extension of that racism that we see coming from Carlson constantly. Yes. And it plays well with his audience. They love it. And they don't realize, or maybe they do, and they don't care what he's really feeding them.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually a regurgitated argument from the Claremont Institute. A guy from the Claremont Institute wrote an essay making that argument during the campaign in 2020. And it's how, and clearly Carlson is just pulling that that same argument up again. Claremont Institute, incidentally, is the right-wing think tank that has gone total Trump. They also argue that the January 6th insurrection was a hoax, and that calling it an insurrection is a hoax. And yeah, they're very, you know, they've praised Carlson and that sort of thing. They ran an essay back in February or March in which a guy basically argued that the right needs to, he didn't call it fascist, but what they, the sort of ethos that he embraced was fundamentally a fascist one, in which they embrace the use of violence against these demonic left. So, you know.
And we're also, we're seeing more and more these days from Republicans jumping on the racial issue. Yeah. You know, with the critical race theory, also the attacks on the LGBTQ community, you know, with them calling the books that deal with this, oh, it's pornographic. You know, that happened, I don't know if it was in Virginia, but it was one of the kind of southern, you know, eastern seaboard states. And then, of course, we had it in Texas, where they say we're going to get rid of the pornographic books. But no, it's not pornographic. It's dealing with different lifestyles. And most of it is stories of abuse. And so it's whatever they can get. Always trying to find, you know, the others, the people that are different from you.
It's all culture war stuff. That's what the Republican Party's been running on for the last 10 years is culture war stuff. And, you know, yeah, you notice that kind of that CRT suddenly disappeared from the airwaves after the Virginia election.
Yeah.
You know, there was some very interesting polling, though, around all this that pointed out that somebody actually tried to poll Republicans about, well, what do you know about CRT? You say you're opposed to CRT. What do you know? And most people don't actually know what the hell CRT, what critical race theory is. And what the polling found out was that, no, really what 70% of Republicans are opposed to is not necessarily CRT. It's the teaching of the history of racism in America to their children. They don't want their children to be taught about the history of racism in America, period. And, you know, that's the point at which you just kind of say, no, our children need to know.
Well, and they do. And a big reason they need to know and understand this is so we don't end up with a bunch of, you know, more Proud Boys. You know, people need to understand what has happened in this country, understand what is happening in this country, and not, you know, to brainwash them, but to open their eyes. You know, this isn't about creating closed-minded children who only believe that. No, this is about saying, listen, there's other life experiences out there. There's other kinds of people. You need to understand this, and you need to understand that, yes, you may not go through the same struggles as these people. And yes, they go through certain struggles because of the color of their skin or because of their sexual orientation. And that's all we want people to understand. Like, listen, some people have it tougher than you, and sometimes the system makes it so. I mean, we're actively still passing laws in this country today to marginalize certain groups of people, you know, based on sexual orientation, based on gender, So it's crazy for people to think that this isn't a crucial issue, but at the same time, it also wasn't being taught anywhere. So they right. made the issue out of nothing. This is a college level, you know, theory, and right. they think we're teaching it to first graders. It's crazy.
Right. Yes. Well, the legend of the child who comes home weeping that she's been told she's an oppressor.
Yeah.
is a very powerful one. And honestly, this is that kind of gets at the nub of what I think Republicans or I should say really right-wing and white nationalist ideologues are exploiting, is that out there among most folks, particularly people who don't think about racism a lot, don't think about, you know, they just kind of lead their daily lives. I think there's a real general discomfort with the idea that they who don't consciously harbor any racial animus in their thoughts or in their dealings with other people, that there's a lot of discomfort that they could be, that they have some culpability and blame for what happened 100 years ago, right? But that's, you know, and I actually get that. I mean, having confronted it myself, it's a very discomforting thing to go through because, yeah, I had a great grandfather who stole land from the Indians. So, you know, it's like, okay, you know, how do you deal with that? But the reality is that, the funny thing about that is that critical race theory, if you actually understand it, actually tells them that, no, you're not to blame. It tells them what critical race theory basically says is that racism and white supremacy is so deeply embedded in our laws and our codes and in the sort of infrastructure that we've built up, that we built up during times when white supremacism was the rule of law, a lot of those structures still exist, we're still enforcing white supremacist ideals and sort of standards unconsciously, and that people of perfectly good will are still enabling it because they're not recognizing the roots of what these, you know, sort of this infrastructure is, this white supremacist infrastructure. It's not visible in the way that it used to be. And so, and I think that actually makes a tremendous amount of sense. And it also relieves people, I think, of the personal responsibility for it, but it also does require the responsibility to fix it.
Yeah.
Which is the way I always approached it. You know, well, I can't do anything about my great grandfather stealing Indians' lands, but I can do what I can do now to make things right here and now, here today. And work towards that.
And
a conscious effort.
Yeah, and we're dealing, though, with a Republican Party that just wants to pretend and convince people that none of this ever happened. And if it right. did happen in some instances, well, of course, it was okay because it created the America we know and love today. And that is a big part of, you know, Tucker Carlson's talking points, of the talking points from some of these other, you know, wackos they have out there right now. Your Marjorie Taylor Greens and your people like that.
Right.
And it's not just, again, saying it didn't happen, but also saying, well, it did. And it was good because that's why we're here today. And I don't even know how you counter that. I don't know how you, you know, correct that in these people that really are the true believers. I know we got to try, but it's just, it is such a Herculean task.
Well, the idea that massive lynching of African Americans was in any way good. You know, the history of lynching and race riots, which is actually ethnic cleansing events, in America is profound. You know, 100 years ago in 1919, we had the Red Summer that saw some 47 so-called race riots break out across the country that actually were mass ethnic cleansing events driving Black people out of white neighborhoods, out of rural areas where they had taken up farming, and all of the other things. And this, it entailed, you know, people burning their homes down, people lynching people, you know, people being killed in large numbers. And we've just erased that from our memory. We've erased that summer from our memory. But it actually was sort of a foundational thing in terms of creating the America that we have today. And the America that we have today is inequitable and unjust. So if you're saying that it's a good thing that we did that in 1919, it created a system where Black people are relegated to poorer neighborhoods and have no ability to work their way up into, network their way up into better economic conditions. If you think that's a good thing, I'm here to tell you you're wrong.
Absolutely. And so real quick here, just a couple minutes, I do want to take the time to talk about what we are seeing, you know, just kind of circle back here with this rewrite of January 6th, because, you know, we just hit on the rewrite of American history, dismissing it, excusing it. And it does all come full circle, because this is what's happening with January 6th. Even though, right, as we already said, we all watched it happen. And we know, because the investigators have gone through years of social media posts from these people, this was not, sure, a false flag event. We would have had to have started planning it 6 years ago and planting these social media posts.
And it wasn't Antifa.
Exactly. And so, but again, with, I forget his name, Republican lawmaker, I guess, Georgia, maybe South Carolina, but who said, oh, it was mostly like people on a tour coming through the White House. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz trying to bust into the prison to expose the horrendous conditions that these patriots are suffering under. It's been 10 months since this happened. That's it, okay? 10 and a half months since January 6th. And we've already hit the point where they're doing a good job, unfortunately, of convincing people that it wasn't as bad as what we all saw that day.
That's correct. Well, they're doing a lot. They're able to do that for a couple of reasons. One, in right-wing media, there's been very little post-January 6th coverage of the event itself. So most people who watch Fox News, for instance, have never seen most of the evidence in this. They've never seen, I'm sure they've never watched that 42-minute New York Times video that compiled all the events, that if you watch it, it's just devastating. It just tells you exactly what happened, and it makes it just unmistakably clear that this was an extremely violent, heavily armed mob that was attempting to not only lynch members of Congress, but to prevent the functioning of American democracy. And yet, yeah, they simply, you know, they don't want to own up to that. And I can't say that blame them, because it's pretty freaking awful. You know, I think, of course, their alternative is to go hide their heads in shame. So, of course, they're just fighting with everything they got. And what is on their side, what's enabled them to get away with it, is that we've had 4 years of authoritarian conditioning by the Trump administration, by Donald Trump in particular, of this whole audience. You know, we've got 63 million people out there that, well, you know, what is it? 70%, 73% of them believe the election was stolen.
Yeah. It's hard to fight against that kind of misinformation, but hey, that's our job. We're doing it. You're doing a phenomenal job of it, by the way, with the Daily Coast. You do it with your books. Real quick, tell everybody where they can find you, where they can follow you.
Well, the easiest place to follow me, of course, is on Twitter under my name, David Nywert, at David Nywert. And you can also, yeah, I write a daily post for Daily Coast. And I have great, you know, I'm very proud to be working there, because I have several great colleagues that I'm very glad that my work's appearing alongside them. And you know, Coast is one of the only organizations that has consistently supported my work over the years. So, I'm very happy to be there, with them. And I think that, you know, you should read not just my stuff, but everyone else is there. But yeah, Twitter and Daily Coast are the best places to find me.
Well, fantastic. David Neiwirth, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Very much a pleasure, Farron.
And that's it for this week's Ring of Fire. And don't forget, get the full show every single week. Go to rofpodcast.com and become a member. And of course, we encourage everyone to go and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. There are brand new, fresh videos every single day of the year. Current, up-to-date news, in-depth analysis, commentary, opinion, and occasionally a little bit of humor. So again, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And if you want to support us by becoming a member of our YouTube channel, go to the community page, look at all of the different tiers we have available, see which one works out best for you. Same thing over on our Patreon at patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. Just like our YouTube community, you can get early access to videos. You can get access to exclusive videos that we do not push to the public. They only go to our members. So make sure you check that out. And if you're able to help, we always appreciate it. And you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Farron Balanced. For everyone here at Ring of Fire, I want to say thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving next week. We got a brand new show coming for you next week, too. So don't think that we're just taking the week off. So we'll talk to you then.